I was 13 when I saw Frank Zappa Shake Your Booty sticking out from a record bin at Peaches Records and Tapes on South Dixie Highway in Miami, Florida. On the cover, Zappa is dressed as if he is an imagined Bedouin, a made-up image conjured out of Lawrence of Arabia with someone's stock photo idea regarding what an Arab sheikh might be looked like. The album cover projects a stereotype, an aggregation of presumed meaning likely collected from B-movies, newspaper headlines, and imagination. When I saw this record in the bin, I had never heard of Frank Zappa before. I barely knew who Frank Zappa was. Without any presumptions, nor internal aggregations of Zappa in his discography, and simply not knowing why, I bought the record. We live in an age where knowledge is presumed. Election results, pandemic responses, university funding, social justice, global conflict, everything appears to us as pre-known. We witness these assumptions on Facebook and Twitter, but also in a considerable amount of academic scholarship, which positions every problem's root cause as a simple point that is obvious to the critic in question. Sometimes that simplicity is posed by keywords or what we might call stereotypes, such as neoliberalism, capitalism, or the colonial. Sometimes that simplicity is a recirculation of various tropes regarding the issues academia feels most important, such as the other stereotypical markers of race, class, and gender. These topoi are not faulty nor without importance, but their presumption positions them in spaces where they don't necessarily explain anything, even as they claim they do so. When I bought that Frank Zappa record at 13 years old, I acted from a position without presumption. I did not have any knowledge of Zappa's musical output. I had no idea that the record I was purchasing may be among his best, or as I can now say, my favorite of his discography. I did not need a trope of quality or success to motivate my act. I needed a hint or a suggestion. That suggestion said to me, there is someone named Frank Zappa who makes music. Hint, hint, buy this. You've heard the name, though you don't know the music. Buy it. So I bought the record. There is benefit in not presuming. There is benefit in not acting as if knowledge is based on a presumed meaning. There is benefit in writing and in thought to bracket assumptions and presumptions regarding those tropes and expectations we bring to rhetorical readings and exchanges. This short essay is a reflection on presumption. This is also a reflection on Frank Zappa. This, I note, is also a reflection on my own lack of interest in scholarship built upon what Roland Barthes once declared, as if everything shudders with meaning. Rhetoric, consumed with meaning, may simultaneously not always involve figuring out what something means or what it is. Rhetoric can also be about suggestion. I'll begin then with a counter-narrative to the contradiction I just posed and ask a question that I pretend I want to ask. What does Zappa mean? Let's consider some of Shake Your Booty's track listings. Flakes, with its Dylan-esque nasal voice interlude, Adrian Belew mimicking the great singer-songwriter Bob Dylan, and he sings, "They didn't do nothing, but they charged me double for Sunday." Or consider Bobby Brown, with its possible critique of, or even ode to, S&M and frat boy culture. Zappa sings, "Oh, she tried to make me say when. She had my balls in a vice, but she left the dick. I guess it's still hooked on, but now it shoots too quick." Maybe the question deserves a listen to City of Tiny Lights, which goes, "Tiny pillows, tiny sheets, talking about those tiny cookies that the people eats." And of course, we could listen to Broken Hearts Are for Assholes, where the lonely guy who is too tough to cry is described in all kinds of bizarre ways, making it difficult to understand what Zappa means it is to be an asshole with a broken heart. The whisker sticking out from underneath of his pancake makeup, and yet he was a beautiful lady, nearly drove you insane, "Let's talk about leather," and so you kissed the little sailor, Tex Abel, starring in the latest Shepherd Inn production, who had just blew in from Spain. I'm not sure if these songs offer any clarification to the question I pose, what does Zappa mean, and yet I pull them from the album as if they offer some semblance of evidence. Asking what Zappa means is itself a complicated question. Rhetorical studies is largely based on this type of question, how and why something means what it does to specific audiences. And most of my research poses such a question as central to any inquiry, as I've done with the fields history, Detroit, craft beer, and personal writing. But when I ask, what does this mean, I seldom search for a definitive answer. I want suggestions. I don't ask the question because I believe there is a hidden answer waiting to be uncovered through analysis or reading through lyrics. To read a musician or a song is typically to interpret one or the other. This type of reading asks us to practice hermeneutics. Bruno Latour challenged the assumptions connected to interpretation, asking if critique which is basically interpretation, has run out of steam. What is the difference between critique and conspiracy theory, Latour asks. If I were to interpret Zappa and the songs on Shake Your Booty, well, would I be at some point engaging in conspiracy theory? That is, would I be discovering a secret that unlocks a representation that we have failed to understand until now? We seldom recognize critique as a form of conspiracy theory. Embedded with any text, we're told, is another hidden meaning. I don't read Zappa that way. I don't read text that way. Critique is a call for representation. Zappa seems to not be about representation, or at least not how I read him. For me, Zappa doesn't represent anything he suggests. I'm thinking about that imagined Arab image on the cover of Shake Your Booty. Once, when lecturing on Buddhism, a student challenged Bartz over his knowledge of the subject. Who said I was an expert on Buddhism? Bartz responds to the student. My understanding of Zappa is like Bart's understanding of Buddhism, Japan, Italian food, the autobiography, or any other subject in which he never claims authenticity, representation, expertise, or even criticism. Just because I write about a subject, Bart seems to say, that doesn't mean I am writing about the subject. There's a country called Japan, and then there's the imagination, which conjures up Japan based on stereotypes, signifiers, common places, and other tropes. There is someone who once lived and was called Frank Zappa. There is a recording he made called Shake Your Booty. I'm not writing about those two. I'm writing about what I imagine them to be. I'm writing about what they suggest to me. Because I'm imagining Zappa in this recording, I'm also generating what Bartz calls signification. Signification is not exactly meaning. With signification, meaning is not within the thing itself. Meaning is generated out of my background, interests, biases, past imagery, understanding of music, stereotypes, ideologies, and so on. If I ask what Shake Your Booty means, I'm asking what my imagination means. There is no meaning in Shake Your Booty the way there is no meaning in Frank Zappa. There is, however, what I imagine. Consider Jewish Princess. In this song, Zappa generates a number of stereotypes about the supposedly iconic spoiled Jewish woman. He claims to want that image. He sings, I want a darling little Jewish princess who don't know shit about cooking and is arrogant looking. A vicious little Jewish princess to specifically happen with a pee-pee that's snapping all up inside. I just want a princess to ride. One could be easily offended at these stereotypes and others in the song. Jewish women can't cook. Jewish women have phony nails and big hair. They have titanic tits and sandblasted zits. The stereotypes, though, are so outrageous, so comedic, so hyperbolic, that I don't see them as a statement attempting representation or as an answer to the question, what's a Jewish princess and should I want her? Instead, I read these lyrics as imaginative, suggestions regarding a certain part of 1970s New York culture that Zappa either participated in or scorned. Imagination on its own is neither good nor it is bad. It's a suggestion of meaning. It's not a presumption of meaning. I want a Jewish princess, Zappa says, based on what I imagine a Jewish princess to be. Or we can look at Dancing Fool, in which Zappa declares, I don't know much about dancing, and that's why I got this song. As the song ends, Zappa imagines an attempt to pick up a girl at what is likely a late 1970s nightclub or disco. Hey, darling, can I buy you a couple drinks? Looking for Mr. Goodbar? Well, here he is. Wait a minute. I've got it. You're an Italian, huh? You're Jewish? Oh, love your nails. You must be a Libra. Your place, or mine. In this exchange, there is an exaggeration of stereotypes. Mr. Goodbar, Jewish, Italian, nails, horoscope, that are not representative of anything but an imagined moment, people who may be at a disco in the mid-1970s, or may not. These signifiers are appropriated and taken out of context. That act provides an audience with a suggestion. What might take place at a disco in the 1970s? This moment, another moment, a stereotype, an aggregation, does it matter? On my wall, I have framed Zappa's record, We're Only In It For The Money. The album cover replicates the cover of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. What does it mean to replicate or appropriate another image or moment, such as a 1970s disco or one of the most popular bands of all time? Is it parody, homage, theft? What act is representative? What does this cover suggest? In 1978, Zappa hosted Saturday Night Live, and while performing Dancing Fool, Zappa brings up a very confused-looking audience member and sings to her the Hey Darling, Can I Buy You a Drink line I just mentioned. When he asks her, Your place or mine, as he does in the song, she shrugs her shoulders as if she has no idea what is going on. Nothing about this moment represents the familiar to her. Nothing about this moment is a representation of something real. Zappa's Jewish Princess is not a real person. His 1970s disco is not a real disco. Whatever real may be, it is always some form of aggregation. Listening to Zappa can be like admitting, I have no idea what is going on. What exactly is being represented? By the end of his Saturday Night Live performance, Zappa is on stage with his shirt unbuttoned, his hairy chest exposed, beginning the song The Purple Lagoon. John Belushi joins him on stage, dressed up as a samurai character, and plays the guitar. Belushi sings gibberish into a microphone connected to the guitar. What the hell is going on, we might ask. What is being represented? Nothing. Dancing Fool concludes with the line, I may be totally wrong, but I'm a fool. This feels like an appropriate response to presumption of meaning. With presumption, we are fools, and we are likely wrong, and we likely have no idea what is going on, even if we claim we do, or place our expertise front and center, or draw upon academic tropes as if they are examples of meaning. We do, however, love the aggregation of stereotypes and tropes that fill our critical analysis and our social media feeds and our generic understandings of the world around us. An Old Onion headline reads, Zappa fan thinks you just haven't heard the right album. I think there may not be a right album for Zappa, or for anyone, or any moment, or any issue, or a wrong album, or an album, whether it is discovered by a 13-year-old or an adult writing a short essay. There are suggestions, hints, no conspiracies, just a lack of presumption, a willingness to not believe everything shudders with meaning.
Wait a minute, I've got it. You're an Italian. Huh? You're Jewish? Oh, love your nails. You must be a Libra. Your place or mine.